And I when I turned it over, tried, you know, pray by it, and what's going to come out is going to come out. And what I can remember is when I was in my addiction, before I even realized that I was an addict, my mother used to always say to me that she didn't like my lifestyle. And I was like, what are you talking about? I only stay out till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and, you know, running around with bikers and, like that's, I just pride myself on being a crazy person, you know, like just doing crazy things and, always instigating a party and being the first one at the party and the last one to leave. And, that still holds true today. Anytime there was a party, I like to be the first one there and last one to leave. So, but she was always telling me how she didn't like my lifestyle, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. And so I continued on, and the lifestyle that I chose in addiction brought me here, and there's a lot of things that I could talk about that were deadly out there, you know. What the disease had taken me to was to the animal level. And sometimes one particular thing, I'll just share this with you. I got in someone's car one night at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I ended up getting raped by this man. And what he did was he had a screwdriver and he put it in my ear. And he said he was going to kill me with it. And after he did what he had to do, like I wasn't done getting high yet. You know, I got out of his car and proceeded to just find ways and means to get more. And like while I was doing that, it was just like I thought, like I had that moment of clarity, you know, like when is it going to be enough? When is it going to be like, hello, you could have just got killed here, you know? But since this is a disease of feelings, and I didn't want to feel that, I wanted to get high because I wanted to mask all that stuff. I didn't want to feel what just happened to me. And I was pregnant too at the time when that happened. And, you know, for some reason I got through all that stuff and I made it here. And, you know, you hear a lot of times that, you know, like I should be dead and, you know, people share they should be dead. This is just for me. I know that I shouldn't be dead. I know that I should be right here, right now. And the reason why I wasn't killed out there using is because I have work to do. You know what I mean? God has me here for a reason. And I believe that the reason for me is I went through stuff and I continue to go through hard stuff, even in recovery. Life's not always easy. And the reason why I got through it is because I got to help somebody. If everything was easy for me and, you know, I never had no problems, who the hell could I help with that? You know, people could come to me and say, I'm struggling with this, I'm struggling with that. And if I didn't go through it, then how could I help you with it? And, you know, and even if I didn't go through whatever someone's going through, all I can do is listen and tell them it's going to be all right. But right after I got clean, I really wasn't clean yet, but I had started coming to meetings. I had my daughter. I came home, backing up a little bit. I came home Thanksgiving Day. This year will be 13 years. And I stayed clean until I had my daughter. And that was in February. And I couldn't wait to have her, see, because I made a deal with God that if he could just help me stay clean until my baby was born, you know, that I didn't want to use until my baby was born. And that was my reservation. Like I couldn't wait to have her because I knew I was going to get high as soon as I had her. And I did that. And I remember it was getting close to my birthday, and I figured I could treat myself to $100 or $200 worth of crack on my birthday. That was going to be my treat to myself. And how I got that money was, I'd steal a little bit of here, a little bit there, I was on welfare at the time. I was just planning this whole get high trip for like 2 months. Talk about being miserable. And the night before I was getting ready to do this whole thing, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep because I had it all planned out and the obsession was on me. And so I got up and I was watching TV. And they were talking about this girl that was killed. And they found her beaten to death in a car right by this bar where I was going to go the next day. And the girl, I used to hang with her when I was using, and she looked a lot like me from behind. We both had the same build, both like same hair, and she was killed. And that scared me, because I thought that could be me, and I went anyways, but it was just like, if the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will, like the topic says. And I don't know, there was a lot of things that I put, situations I put myself in that I could have been killed through, and I choose not to do that today, when I got clean, I was clean for about 5-6 years, and I had lived with my mother for 4 years, and then I saved up enough money, and I bought my own house. And I never thought that I was ever going to be a homeowner, but I was. And so I get in this house, and it's me and my daughter, nice little house, and I started a business, and I was painting and doing the things that I love to do, and there was something missing, and it was a man in my life. And so instead of sitting still and waiting for God to do what he's going to do, like any good addict, I decided to take matters into my own hands, and I would start going out. And I couldn't find no one to come with me, and I was very lonely, and sitting still was the hardest thing I ever did. A lot of times my daughter was the one watching me. Like I wouldn't go out after a meeting, or I wouldn't go out on a Saturday night because there was no one to watch her, so I'd stay home. But every once in a while, I would. And one night I went to a wedding. Someone in recovery got married, and the guy I went with, I thought we were going to go out afterwards, and he said he wanted to go home and study. So I was all dressed up and no place to go, and so I decided to go out. And I went down in Pittsburgh, there's a place called Chauncey's. I went down there, and I stayed there till 2 o'clock in the morning, and came home by myself, and I still had this void, and I figured I could find it at a bar, And I know it didn't sit right with me, but I was doing it anyway. And my sponsor said to me, "What are you doing? You're going down the wrong road here," and I was acting out on some defects, and she said, "If you come through this clean, I'll help you pick up the pieces." So I was on my way, and where it led me to was I went out again, probably like the next weekend, with a girlfriend of mine. We went to a bar. She's in recovery too, and her ex-boyfriend was playing in a band at this bar. And there was a guy sitting at the end of the bar, and he looked real good, and he came up to me and said real nice things, and he asked me out to dinner, because like before in my life, I never dated. You know what I mean? It was always, I'd hear the motorcycle at the end of the street, and I was off and running. Like, there was no dating going on. And to go out on a date was like new to me. So I went out with this guy, and we went to dinner, and he said, they came and took the drink order, and I just ordered a Coke. And he said, don't you want wine or something? And I said, no, I don't drink. And he got this look on his face like, oh, what did I get myself into? This girl don't even drink. And he said, what else don't you do? And I said, I don't do anything. And I said, I'm in recovery. You should have seen his face, man. It was like, he was like, oh, why did I have to pick you to go out with tonight? That's what he looked like, you know. So I just started talking about something, and I got real nervous. And so he hurried up and ate, and he said, well, come on, let's go. And we left, and he was like, well, I got to stop at my house. And I was like, okay, I'll wait in the car. I started getting real nervous. And he's like, no, come on in. I just got to make a couple phone calls. So we went in, and he proceeded to call the dope man and make arrangements to cop. Here I am with 5-6 years clean, sitting in it. I said, well, can you take me home first? And he didn't. So we're in Lawrenceville somewhere, copping dope. I got 5-6 years clean. I could just see me now telling it to the judge. But, Your Honor, I go to meetings all the time. You know, and I'm sitting here on a dope deal, and anything could have happened. You know, but he took me home. The next day I called my sponsor, and I was telling her, I guess I sounded like a victim, and I wasn't, and she let me have it pretty hard. I said, but he wouldn't even take me home before he copped. She said, would you? You know? So that woke me up right there, and, you know, acting out like that. And the message that I got from that, and that was a valuable lesson for me. The message that I got from that was, you know, I really have to watch what I do. I really have to be mindful about what I do in my recovery, or I'm going to lose it. You know, I can't act on those things like that, because that lets a spirit in my soul that I can't afford to have in there. I can't be a thief like I was before. You know, I can't be dishonest like I was before. I mean, there are times that I'm going to fall, and I'm going to fall short, and that's okay. The 10th step can help me with that at the end of the day. But if I let, like I said, when I was going out on those to those bars and stuff, I knew it wasn't right. It wasn't right in my soul. And I'm very fortunate that I came out of that holding my same clean date. Because if I act out and I'm doing stuff that's not conducive to my recovery, what that does is, someone explained it to me one time, it lets that little bad thing in your soul, that little bad guy in your soul, and like a conscience, and if that gets comfortable in there, what's next? You know, so what I do today has a direct result on what my recovery is going to be down the road. Because if something like that sits with me okay today, what's next? And pretty soon that bad thing in my soul is going to invite his buddies in. They're going to set up camp. And next thing you know, I'll be sitting in a jail cell or in an institution saying, what happened? And I've seen it happen. Girls I sponsor, or just, you know, people coming in and out, you know, it's like the whole self-will thing can really jam people up, you know. I've been hearing a lot lately about people complaining about their thoughts in their head and what they're thinking about doing and thinking about saying, and how it makes you feel real ugly sometimes. Last year, something very hurtful was in my life. Who I thought was a good friend of mine totally quit talking to me. And it was very hurtful. And the things I wanted to do to this girl, I could be in jail for life, you know, what was in my head. And I felt real ugly behind it, and I was crying a lot, and I was praying a lot, and I didn't understand why all this happened. And I just sat still, though. I mean, even though what I was thinking about doing, I mean, look what I was thinking about doing and did with going to the bars, where that led me to. I was on a dope deal, you know? And what I was thinking about doing to her and, like, the revenge thing, like, that's not recovery, you know? That's not being serene. That's not being in recovery and trying to change. That's the street. You know, when the street comes up with me and it starts coming out of my mouth, I'm in conflict. And my sponsor tells me, and this is true, that spiritual principles are never in conflict. And when I'm in conflict, I'm not in spiritual principles. And I can feel it. And I don't like how that feels. And I don't want to be in that mode where I don't like how it feels inside for too long, because if I stay stuck there, I'm endangering my recovery, you know. And it is a choice, you know. I don't have to feel that way. I don't have to be that way. I can choose to get into the solution, or I can choose to stay in a problem. And sometimes all it just is just sitting still, you know. For me, sitting still and letting God do what He's going to do has been the hardest thing in my recovery. I always say this: when I don't know what to do, I don't do anything. And that, does that mean that, oh, I don't have a job, I'm just going to lay here and wait for one to come? Or no, it doesn't mean that. It means when there's something going on with my feelings, is that sometimes it takes a while for my feelings to pass. And you just gotta let God do it, and sometimes that's really hard. Like I said in the beginning, I have to be really mindful of what I do in my day-to-day life. That I'm not hurting anybody, and I'm not hurting myself. And if I'm doing that, I'm living God's will. And, recovery, has offered me a lot of things, but the thing that I'm most grateful for, I believe, is a choice, you know. And when I first got here, I didn't think I had a choice. I thought I had to use, you know. You get that, the obsession comes on you, it's in your head, your stomach's flipping, you got to go and do it. And I'm just grateful that I was able to sit still long enough to realize that I was worth it. And I was worth recovery, and I still am. And it's the evidence is in, you know, that if the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will. I mean, you look on the news. Every morning I listen to the news, and someone got shot 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Then they always say, police believe it's drug-related. God, what clued you in on that, you know? And I'm not out there 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I always tell my husband I feel safe and warm. When I was using, there was always this feeling, and it's somewhere between my gut and my spine, this quivering feeling of uneasiness and what we call impending doom. And I don't feel that anymore. Now I feel safe. I love this fellowship. I have a tremendous support group. I have a wonderful family. And that's all from making a choice. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm an addict. I would like to introduce the second speaker, Nate P. from Back to Basics Group of NA in the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of NA.
Nate, I'm an addict.
Hi, Nate.
Fuck. I'll probably start with one of the most important things my sponsor ever told me is it's all about change. And something I've come to believe is if my behaviors don't change, my clean date will. You know, and I don't want to stand up here and I don't want to put on my, I don't know, my church face. I don't want to sound good like I'm in church on Sunday and then go back out and live as shitty as I tend to do, you know. I'll stand here and be honest, because a lot of times I don't get nothing out of the perfect speakers, you know what I mean? Like, because I don't live that way yet, and I don't know how to do that yet, so a lot of times I don't relate to that yet. I don't know. I see people all the time that just there's things that don't want to change. You know, and so far I've been graceful. I've been blessed with enough grace that, like, I don't have to go the way other people choose to go. You know, I have these moments where, like, I'm okay. Like, I'm able to learn from, like, someone else's mistake, but I still enjoy bumping my own head every now and then, too. You know, because it might end up different for me. You know what I mean? Maybe they just didn't get it quite right yet, you know, but I'm smarter than them, so test this fucker out once, you know, see what we can do with it. And it never ends the same. You know, the ends are always the same. You know, I've been to meetings all over and never once heard, you know, any variation of that, you know. The results are sometimes the same, you know. The results are more than most times the same. Fucking always the same. You know, when we do that reading that, you know, that no addict ever need die. That stings every time it gets read. You know, I'm not one of the people that, and I'm not judging, and I have a tendency to judge, and I'll talk about that, but this is not judgment. I'm not one of the people that sit there and chant and make fun of the readings and carry on with it like it's a fucking party. I think it's serious. That's me. That's personal. That's the shit that keeps me in the seat. You know? And that stings every time I hear it, because there's faces that go with that. You know, there's people that couldn't make it. You know, there's chairs that are empty that didn't have to be. You know? And I don't have to be one of them. I haven't been yet, and I hope to God for the rest of my life, if I live to be 120, I never have to find out what they do. You know, but it's in the steps. That's what I was taught. That's what I believe. It doesn't matter what my ego tells me, as long as I believe that it's in the steps, that it's all about change. That if I act the same, I'll be the same. You know, the steps, as they apply to me, have provided a change so that, like, I don't have to be the same anymore. I don't have to be the same person. I don't have to have the same mouth, the same beliefs, the same ego, the same attitude. You know, I don't have to get my moral belief system from a television show. I'm allowed to make my own and feel good about it. I'm allowed to go out and experience the world. I don't have to take someone else's belief. If I don't like yours, I can respect it, but it doesn't have to be mine. I don't need that much approval from you. I'm okay with me. That's so far. I mean, that's what the steps have done for me, among many, many other things. I have my own opinions today, you know, and they're not respected everywhere I go, but they're mine. It's what I believe. It's not what this group over here believes. You know, and that's somebody that I used to be. I had no self-esteem. I didn't fit in anywhere because I was just different. I was weird. You know, I couldn't quite hang out with them because, you know, they knew I was different, and so did I. And I couldn't quite hang out with these over here because everybody knew I was different than them. And I didn't really belong anywhere. You know, so I tried twice as hard to become something I wasn't just so I had a place to go where I didn't feel at home anyway. And I carried that with me for a long time. And in some degrees, I still do, you know. I knew I was different ever since I was little. And I had character defects long before I actually got high. And those character defects are still present in my life, and fucking stealing is fucking one of them. You know, I haven't actually said that in a meeting ever. So there you go. I mean, this is like the meeting to be honest about all the bullshit that you're still fucking doing. You know, this is the one that nobody wants to speak at. Because you gotta get honest about the shit you still do. Stealing. I said it. Whatever. But something that Kim said, I agree with. I know what's right and I know what's wrong, and I have to force myself to do that shit. It doesn't come natural. I have to make myself go into a place. I have to make myself steal that shit. That doesn't just flow like water. It doesn't come natural. It's not part of my day-to-day routine. I have to make that happen. And that ain't practical. It ain't spiritual. And when I get home, I feel like shit. I got free stuff, but at what fucking cost? You know, and also, I haven't heard, maybe I've heard it said, but like it didn't quite hit home. If I'm okay with that, what's next? You know, seriously, it's like a lightning bolt with that one. I don't know why it just now set in, but what is next? You know, what's left? You know, for people like us, how long do we have to tempt fate before we just kick it right in the balls? I don't know. My clean date's February 28, 1999. I only got high for 5 years, but I wasn't any good at it. I ran out of ways and means really fucking fast. I stole from everybody I knew right away, and I spent all my resources right away. You know, at 18, I was already upstate, and I spent almost 5 years in the pen. For stealing. You'd think I'd learn. You know, whatever. You know? And it's not about the drugs for me. It's never been about the drugs. It's about, I don't like the way that I feel. So I feel different. You know, and being the kind of person that I am, I don't give a shit if it's better or worse. Just, God, not the same. You know? And it never brought about like a lasting change. Because there was never actually any healthy work that went into that. It was all just cover-up shit. You know, my girlfriend says, oh, you know, Gucci on the outside, Kmart on the inside. It's that kind of shit. Stuff that I'll never know that there's a way to relieve that if I don't ever work a step. Me. Cannot speak for anybody else. I got friends that just don't get high anymore. You know, and got high for 30 years. Never went to a meeting, they're fine, they look normal, they're good. What I need to do is not buy into the bullshit that I can be like them. I mean, I have friends of every shape and color. You know, good ones, bad ones. Like Gil said, up here, down here, so that I'm in the middle and I never get too lopsided. But I need to know who I am and what I'm capable of and what's possible and what ain't. I don't know, there's a period like two years ago. I don't know, I had like three jobs. I was putting myself through school. I had like, I don't know, 120 hours a week. So there was like no time for meetings. There was like work, get up, go home, sleep for 4 hours, get up, back to work. For, I don't know, year and a half, long time. You know, and during that, I had a fiance that was normal. She wasn't one of us. And I started hanging out with like her and her family all the time, and we'd go to the lake and we'd hang out and we'd have fun and they'd all drink and they thought it was fucking amazing that like I didn't drink. You know, because they all did. That was part of their thing, you know. That was normal for them, you know. And, you know, they'd always ask me and I'd always say no and they'd leave it alone. And the next time we'd hang out, they'd ask me again like I was going to change my mind or something, you know. Like, well, now I'm not a junkie today. Yeah, I'll have one. Like that was going to change. But they didn't know that and that's fine. You know, and until the one day I had been separated from us long enough and been engulfed with them long enough that I bought into the bullshit. Maybe I can do it. Maybe. You know, so on the way to the lake, fucking excited. You know, I planned out my relapse and I was fucking ready, you know. We were going to have fun and I was not going to feel bad for it. And I had this whole plan together and it was fucking exciting, you know. I bought a case of beer and we went to the lake and I don't know, like the weather was perfect and there was none of you fuckers there, so there was nobody to call me on. And I thought it was beautiful and I didn't even see how fucked up it already was. You know, then came the moment of truth. I took the cap off and I smelled it. And instantly something wasn't right. That was not a smell that I had smelled for almost 6 years at that point. You know, that bottle in my hand was not a feeling that was familiar for six fucking years. And all of a sudden, everybody was there. You know, and I had thought about things that I didn't think about previous to that because I got caught up in, like, lying to myself about how fun it was going to be and how possible it was. Never even considered that it wasn't possible. And I thought about all the lies that I would have to tell. And I didn't even take a drink of the first one yet, but I thought already that when I wake up, I'm going to want one. You know, and I'm not going to drink fucking six tonight. I'm going to drink them all, and I'm going to have to get up really early and go get more. And I didn't even fucking use yet. And then it dawned on me, normal people don't think that way. Normal people also don't think about smoking crack, which was also up in there floating around too. You know, so I thought about, you know, just how hard it was going to be to juggle, because I wasn't going to tell you. I wasn't going to say nothing. I still had the same clean date, and we were going to run with it, and, you know, I was still going to be me, and you guys were going to be you, and I was just going to have a little separate home life that you didn't know about. And I was going to manage that, and it was going to be okay. So I actually thought about how hard it was really genuinely going to be. You know, and I consider myself so fucking lucky that I didn't actually have to do it to see how hard it was going to be. That was one of the few times that I played the tape all the way to the end. And it didn't end. It just kept going, and the song kept getting worse. You know, at no point did it get okay. So I sat there with that bottle in my hand until it got warm. And I dumped it out. You know, I tried to call my sponsor, but I didn't have reception there, which was also real fucking convenient, you know, so I couldn't call anybody. I figured that was a sign from God that he didn't want me to call and, like, tell him my disease, that he was, like, giving me the thumbs up to go ahead and relapse. So I went to bed. And I woke up the next day, and I told a handful of people. I don't remember who I told. But as I stand in front of you, that is one of the few things in my life that I can honestly say I'm extremely happy that that didn't happen. You know, we just lost somebody in the area that thought he could drink. His name was Aaron. Aaron died on Wednesday. Well, he could have sat there. You know, he could have sat anywhere. You know, everybody knows people like that from every area. You know, and thank God it's not me. You know, because somebody wasn't blessed enough to play that tape all the way out and to think about how fucked up it was going to be, that bought into the bullshit that it was still going to be okay, that it was going to be manageable, forgetting that the first step says that it's not. Never was, never will be. You know, it's fucked up at best. And if I make it into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, there ain't no good way to, like, actually do this shit. You know? Because, like, you just kind of don't make a left-hand turn and get here by mistake. You don't come here unless you're just like me. Just like all of us. So, I don't know. But that's why that reading stings. Because nobody needs to die. Nobody. Some of us do. Triangle of self-obsession. Everybody knows what that ends with. Must grow up or die. Doesn't say grow up or be miserable. Doesn't say grow up, maybe be okay. Our reading talks about finding a better way to live. It doesn't talk about finding a better way to use. I really believe that I'm fucking finished. That I belong here, that I fit here, that there's no way for me to get high and, like, manage that. There's no way, and I know that there's no way for me to continue the lifestyle, that the image, you know, that this fucking tough guy, that I'm really not. I have no respect for a tough guy. I don't. If you can't settle something with intelligent conversation, I don't really respect you. If you have to resort to your fist because you're out of fucking brain power, sorry. That is not what I want to be. And I hate the fact that I still sometimes try to convey that that's the kind of person I am. You know? I really believe that there's nothing that can't be settled with rational conversation, but I have to be calm enough and sometimes think for two people enough to do that. The program has taught me how to do that. But if I don't want to, I can wreak havoc in my own life and be a tough guy until I'm back in the pen and I can give myself a pat on the back and say, we showed them, you know. Show them who we are. Fucking idiot. I don't know. What got me clean? When I was little, I didn't want to be the tough guy, right? I wanted to be the crazy guy. Because even the tough guy got fucked with every now and then. The crazy guy was the one that just might bring a gun and kill everybody. Nobody fucked with him. That's the one I wanted to be from, like, my earliest memory. And also my earliest memory is shoplifting. I stole a pocket knife from my cousin. And I stole something the next day from a store, and I got caught both times. I should have knew then to just hang it up early. You know, but these are things, you know, that were important to me when I was getting high. an image. Ego. My sponsorship family talks a lot about image and a lot about ego. Because most of the bad decisions I make come from those two things and me being concerned with them. How I look to you and how you feel about me. Not how I look to myself, not how I feel about myself, but it's all rooted in someone else. And I missed the point that you guys saved my ass, but when at the end of the day, all I have is me. The step work I do is not for you. It's not so I can stand up here and sound really good. You know, it's for me. It's how I feel. It's so I don't want to buy some rope when I go at home at night and just hang it up. You know, it's so I can, like, stand up and go to work and face another day. You know, but the image comes with the lifestyle. We know that because you're all fucked up on the inside. You haven't showered in days. Lips are all fucking gray. Look like shit, but I got new clothes on. You know, because I look good. And if I look good, therefore, I am good. Doesn't matter how I feel. It matters how I look. And I get caught up in the image. And I do that sometimes here, you know. Because I forget that the inside is what matters. You know, and a lot of times... Well, I don't know. Everybody in this room has seen every end of the spectrum on that one. If I don't change, my clean date will. That's what I believe. Yeah, there's that, and there's the. It's all in the steps. I might not even know what the questions are yet, but I know where the answers lie. You know, and if when I finished my ninth step, I figured I'd take a couple weeks off. You know, because I deserve that. I'm finished writing on it. I haven't even gone over it yet. Right? But I finished it in the book, right? So that's good. You know, because sometimes I forget that there's a marginal degree of effort that comes after you complete it in the book. The book does nothing but open up my mind to what I now must physically and mentally do. But like I forget that sometimes, right? I finish it in the book, I'm done. I'm ready to go to the next step. Long story short, that's been a long break. It's been about a year. I've written on two questions in my 10th step and I didn't even go over my 9th with my sponsor. And I blame him because he's busy. You know? But sometimes I forget, and I also need to be honest, that even when I worked 120 hours a week, I found time to do what I wanted to do. So it's bullshit to blame somebody else, and it's bullshit to say, now that I only work 50 hours a week, where'd the time go? Sorry, I didn't call you, but things have been really busy. I never told Mario that down the city. Sorry, man. I was going to come buy some crack from you, but I just got real busy. And for me personally, why the fuck does it matter now? Because I do what I feel is important. And I let things go that I don't think are. And I lie to myself the whole way. So that I'm the last to know when something really horrible is about to happen. And I can cry victim. It's about being accountable. Being self-supporting. You know, not relying on handouts from others. But also not slapping those hands away when I need them. It's not about doing it myself all the time, every time. And it's not about never doing it myself at all. It's a healthy mix for me. Like doing what I can, when I can. But if I can't do it by myself, saying, all right, you know what, I do need some help. Would you please come help me? You know, when I was getting high, I did not say please, I did not say thank you. Not unless my parents gave me money and that ended quick, so I didn't say them two words much. You know, but like I try to say that all the time when I ask for things. I'm not always good at it, but please and thank you are some of the most powerful words I know. You can get anybody to do anything if you're nice enough to them. That works for getting high. It also works for just being a human being. I really don't care if I have the trendiest clothes. I don't care if I have the nicest clothes. I do care if my clothes are wrinkled, but like I really don't think that has anything to do with image, but I just don't like fucking wrinkles, so whatever. You know, it matters how I feel. That's why I got high. That's why I stay clean. You know, and like some really horrible shit can happen. Doesn't matter what it is. I have been through more pain clean than I ever did when I was getting high. And I've stayed clean through all of it. And I've watched it fade away. You know, and I've watched people go through the same thing using, and they're still living in it like it just happened yesterday. You know, I have the benefit of reprieve that, like, it doesn't hurt that much today. You know, if I'm not putting all those chemicals in me to stop that shit, there is no quick fix for spiritual pain. There's just not. But there is, I think, only a certain amount of pain inside. And if I just let that come out on its own, it'll go away on its own, and it goes away in the most genuine manner. But if I'm covering that up with chemicals, it's still there. It never even had a chance to start to come out, and I live in that forever. You know, and this is not the easiest thing to do. It's really not, because sometimes you just have to sit there. And you got to wait for the pain to pass. And like, knowing anything is knowing that sometimes I can do nothing. Fucking nothing. Just wait. I don't have the most patience, but I do have a little more than I used to. You know, and honestly, the Narcotics Anonymous has given me absolutely everything. You know, and the more I put into it, the more I get out of it. If I put nothing into it, I have no right to complain. You know, I can't blame my sponsor, my support group, my meetings in Johnstown, anything for the spiritual condition that I find myself in, because I know better than that now. I have complete control over my reactions to what happens to me. I have no control over what happened to begin with. But I can act like a nutter, I can leave it be. And I'm the only one that benefits or doesn't benefit from it. I can act like a nut and shake things up, you know, and just let it go. I don't really care much for chaos anymore, which I'm real happy to say. I'm pretty happy sitting at home being boring. You know, watching my fish tank, my TV, hanging out with my girlfriend, just being as normal as possible, as normal is understood by me. I don't know, but it's important for me to, like, keep things exciting, too. If things get boring, I quit doing them. Like, when weed stopped working, I started taking pills. When pills stopped working, I started drinking a whole lot more. When it doesn't work the way I want it to anymore, I have a tendency to change it and make it worse or quit completely. If meetings get boring, it's time to travel. Time to go see some friends I haven't seen in a while. It's time to make a road trip. You know, it's my responsibility, not NA's. NA will survive without me. I have learned that and I believe that. I'm not that important that I will, like, directly affect the entire consciousness of this room. You guys might think of me, but I won't have any real direct reflection on somebody's life after a couple of days. I need to stay humble enough to remember that. You guys were here long before me. You'll be here long after, hopefully. We will. I heard it said, I don't know how to get clean. We do. None of this would work if I, like, did it by myself. None of it. I'm glad I know that. You know, I get real happy when I haven't seen people, like, for a really long time. Like, my first sponsor spoke here today. I've seen him twice in, like, 3 years. That kind of stuff really is lie about where I'm at and what I'm doing and what I am. It's still just because it's easier. You know, because you do pay a price. You know, I know what it feels like to, like, drive home with a carload of stolen shit. I know what that feels like. It ain't fucking exciting. You know, you kind of feel like you just used. In reality, I did. If I believed that drugs were a symptom of a greater problem, then I also believe that what I did is just as fucking bad. You know, I don't minimize my defects. I don't tell myself, well, it's just shoplifting. It's just stealing. It's just a little lie. It's just a little bag of dope, too. what makes one any more, you know, worse or any better than the other. They're all defects. They all make me sick. They all affect me in some way. So I don't know how much time I have, but I do want to thank everybody for listening. I haven't spoken in a while, but I don't know. My first sponsor used to tell me something that I'll end with, and hopefully I remember it enough not to butcher it. And it kind of describes me. There once was a boy who grew up to be a man, only to find that he was still a boy, still trying to be a man. There's always hope. Thanks.